You know, it's been a long, long time since we've been to Riverdale, that wonderful town where people care and life is usually fair. So I went back the other day, and I must tell you, Riverdale has changed. It's not the same. I went into Gower's Drugs, knowing that Gower's had not changed. And yes, Maude and Elmer were there. They seemed to transcend change. And Maude was drinking a caramel latte. Can you believe it? A caramel latte. Come on, Maude, where's the large glass of chocolate milk? I mean, Gower's Drugs, it looks like Starbucks. And I'll tell you something else I couldn't get over. You know what they have in Riverdale? A Chick-fil-A. They have a Chick-fil-A in Riverdale now. I don't know. But Riverdale just didn't seem the same. And I kind of wandered around, and in many ways, I felt like a stranger. Can you feel like a stranger in a friendly town? I guess you can if you choose to be a stranger. But when I settled in at Gower's, getting over the shock of caramel lattes, I listened to the conversation that was going on between Maude and Gertrude Shoemaker. They were talking about Buford Bentley. Do you remember the Bentleys? I had to think, Mr. and Mrs. Bentley, I do remember they used to come to church. They would sit over in this section, over on the side. They were very quiet and reserved. They were pretty faithful in church on Sunday mornings. They didn't belong to a Sunday school. I don't think they ever came on a Wednesday night. You never saw them at any special events, any Bible studies. I don't believe Mr. or Mrs. Bentley, either one, ever belonged to a committee. In fact, I can't even remember her name. We just called her Mrs. Bentley. But they were always in church on Sunday. Mr. Bentley was not a community person. He didn't belong to a civic club. You never saw them at any community events. Now, they told me that sometimes in the afternoon he would go to Gower's and get a cherry Coke, usually after he had been to the cleaners. But then when they quit serving cherry Cokes at Gower's, for reasons I don't understand, he quit going to Gower's. Mr. Bentley sold insurance. He had a little office in the McNeil building. That's next to Clark and Harvey, above Timmy's barber shop. Of course, Timmy hasn't been there lately. You know, he's recovering from his accident. But he will be back. But Mr. Bentley and Mrs. Bentley were just there. But then, about a year and a half ago, Mrs. Bentley died. And that's when the mystery started. There is a wonderful committee, a wonderful group in the church. Whenever there's a death, they will contact the family and have a meal for the family. And so when they contacted Mr. Bentley after Mrs. Bentley's death, he told them, there is no family. And then when the obituary came out in the paper, it was just a graveside service, but the obituary only listed Mr. Bentley. He was the sole survivor. And that's what got Maude and Gertrude going, because Gertrude remembers there was a daughter. She knew there had been a daughter because she went to school with her son and her name was Beatrice. But everyone called her BB. She hated her name. She told her parents, why would anyone name someone Beatrice in the 20th century? It sounded like something out of Gone with the Wind. She wanted to change her name. Her mother said, well, honey, what name do you want? And she said, Sophia, Why didn't you name me Sophia? That's what I wish my name would be. And she tried to get people to call her Sophia, but it never caught on. And so she went by Bibi, which was just fine with her as long as no one called her Beatrice. Now, Bibi was very popular in high school. In fact, the only time people remember Mr. and Mrs. Bentley coming to a football game was her senior year when she was elected to the homecoming court. And they dressed up in their Sunday finest and came to the football game to see their daughter. So when her class graduated, the majority of the kids were going off to college at State and Carolina, Appalachian. You had a few that went to Wake Forest. A few of the girls were going to Meredith. And there was one student, Ronald McDonald Tidmo O'Connell Brown. Well, that's what they called him. He got a full ride to Duke. But B.B. told everybody she was going to Notre Dame. But it just didn't add up. But then they found out she really was going to Notre Dame, but not the Notre Dame University. She was going to a woman's college in Maryland named Notre Dame, Woman's College of Notre Dame in Maryland, the only woman's college in the state of Maryland. So the kids graduated and they went off to school, and that was the last anyone heard of B.B. People would ask Mr. and Mrs. Bentley, how's B.B. doing? And they would say, oh, she's fine. But if you ask them any more questions, you could tell they did not want to talk about it. When the class would gather for their reunions, everybody would wonder, where's B.B.? What happened to B.B.? And when they were getting ready for their 20th reunion, someone went online and tried to find B.B., and they thought they had located her out in Nevada. They sent an invitation, but it came back with a handwritten note on the envelope, no one by that name lives here. And so people quit asking. And then Mrs. Bentley died, and B.B. was not even listed as one of the survivors. And people didn't know what to say. So they didn't say anything except at Gower's. And all of that was just gossip and speculation. Now, after Mrs. Bentley died, Mr. Bentley came to church occasionally, but then he disappeared. And since he was such a loner, it took 2 or 3 months, but people started asking, what happened to Mr. Bentley? Anybody seen Mr. Bentley? You know, church people are good about asking where someone is. And finally, somebody called him and said, Mr. Bentley, we're missing you in church. And he said, well, I don't think I'll be back. I have cancer. And that was it. They thought it was gone. They thought they'd never see him again until the first Sunday of January. And Mr. Bentley showed up in church. He didn't just show up for church. He looked like a different man. He was happy. He was smiling. He was shaking hands. He offered to go to work, to be on a committee. He asked the preacher, was there anything he could do? And not only this, the offering for the first Sunday of January exceeded the budget requirement for the whole month. Now, of course, we know all of that is confidential, but the speculation was that Mr. Bentley had made a significant contribution on that first Sunday. So people were wondering what in the world has happened to Mr. Bentley, and they decided it was a miracle. It was a miracle. Mr. Bentley has been cured of his cancer, and he is a changed man. But Elmer said, he's never said he's been cured of his cancer. And Maud said, well, I believe I'll just ask. much to Elmer's dismay, "It's none of our business, Maud." "Well, Elmer, if I had been cured of cancer, I'd want everyone to know it." And so after church the next Sunday, she marched up to Mr. Bentley, and she said, "Mr. Bentley, we're so happy that you're back in church. We heard that you had cancer. You've been on our prayer list. We have been praying for you, but you must have experienced a miracle. You must have been healed." And Mr. Bentley smiled and said, "Yes, I have. There has been a miracle, and I have been healed." And Maud said, "I've always heard of people who've been cured of cancer, but I've never known anyone." And then Mr. Bentley said, Oh, there's been a miracle, but I still have cancer." The story that has never been told until now started about 20 years ago. It was B.B.'s second year at the Woman's College of Notre Dame in Maryland. Her first three semesters had gone wonderfully well. She made excellent grades. She had high hopes and dreams for the future. She was happy. She was involved in campus life. And then about midway through the spring semester, when the Atlanta-bound bus stopped in Riverdale mid-afternoon, a battered and bruised young lady stumbled off the bus without any personal belongings, and she walked up Main Street and into her house, where her mother, Mrs. Bentley, was working on a piece of cross stitch. And when Mrs. Bentley saw her daughter, she screamed. Her face was just battered with bruises and bloodstains. Her hair was matted with dried blood. It looked like her wrist had been broken. She just looked terrible. It was like she had been in some accident. And Mrs. Bentley screamed and said, "Oh my, what has happened to you?" And B.B. just broke down and she sobbed. And her mother kept saying, "What has happened? What has happened to you?" A distraught Mrs. Bentley called her husband, and he quickly came home from the office. And together they pleaded with their daughter to go and get medical help. But all she could do was sit there and sob. And finally, through the tears, as her parents kept saying, "Tell us what has happened. Tell us what has happened," she screamed, "I'm pregnant. And when I told him I was pregnant, he told me that I had to go and have it taken care of. And when I refused, when I said that I would not do that, he went into a rage and he said, 'Well, then I will beat it out of you.'" And she sobbed even more. The Bentleys' hearts were crushed. They were devastated. Mrs. Bentley sat there and held her daughter as she wept. And while Mr. Bentley felt for his daughter, he found himself being overcome with another emotion that he could not explain. But he had a sense of anger that came over him. Anger at his daughter. Because he felt that when he sent her off to school, that she was mature, that she would make wise decisions, that she would understand that there was nothing more important than her education, that she would not go off to school and get mixed up with some boy. She would not lapse into some moral behavior that she had been taught her whole life was not right. And he just found himself being overcome with this anger. And he started to say words to his daughter that were hurtful and that were painful. And Mrs. Bentley pleaded with her husband to stop, to have compassion, to have mercy. She said, "Can't you see what she's been through?" And Mr. Bentley said, "Can't you see that she brought this on herself?" And the angry words became even worse. And finally he said to his daughter, "If you had loved us, you would not have done this." The next morning, Bibi was gone. She took a few of her personal belongings, and for some reason, she took the piece of cross stitch that her mother had been working on. It was only halfway finished. The days went by. The days turned into weeks. Mrs. Bentley pleaded with her husband to try to find their daughter, but he wouldn't listen. He started to slip into a deep, dark shell. She couldn't even talk to him anymore. They lived in the same house, but they barely spoke. The weeks turned into months. There was no word from the daughter. Mrs. Bentley prayed every day that the phone would ring, that she would receive a letter, that something would happen and they would hear from their daughter. But the months turned into years. They never saw their daughter again. And then Mrs. Bentley died. And not long after that, Mr. Bentley found out he had cancer. It was Christmas Eve. Mr. Bentley was at home alone, as always. And he started thinking about the fact that this would be his last Christmas. So he decided to go to Clark and Harvey and buy a turkey. He went and bought a turkey, and he put it in the oven. And as the aromas of that baking turkey filled the house, he was brought back in his mind to memories of happy years. But the memories quickly became painful, too painful to bear. He couldn't sleep that night. He was sitting up in his chair late at night when he heard a light knock at the door. He went to the door, and there was a young lady. I mean, a very young lady. She probably was still a teenager, standing there holding a baby. He brought them in the house, and he said, "Who are you?" The frightened young girl looked at Mr. Bentley and said, "My name is Sophia, and this is my daughter, my baby. Her name is Beatrice." "Why are you here?" She said, "My mother told me before she died, if I ever got in trouble, I should come here and bring this." And she held up the unfinished piece of cross stitch that he immediately recognized, the one his wife had been working on that fateful day. And it read, "The final form of love." The most important thing in life is relationships. But relationships are not possible without forgiveness. And forgiveness is not possible without love, without God's love. Mr. Bentley was healed that day. Mr. Bentley experienced a transformation that day. In the story that we heard this morning, the gospel story, the one that Betty Jane shared with us, Jesus asked an interesting question. What is easier? Is it easier to forgive someone of their sins? Or is it easier to say, take up your bed and walk? Well, Mr. Bentley answered that when Maud asked him if he had experienced a miracle, if he had been healed. When he told her, yes, there has been a miracle. I have been healed, but I still have cancer. He had been cleansed in his soul. He had been healed in his heart. The love of God had finally claimed him, and forgiveness had become a reality. And Mr. Bentley was a changed man. He took his granddaughter and his great-granddaughter into his home, and he provided for them. And as time went on, he learned the sad, sad story of his daughter, Bibi. That night, when she left in the middle of the night, after he told her, if you had loved us, you would not have done this, she just wandered from town to town. She finally had the baby, and she named her baby Sophia. Sophia and her mother also went from town to town, living in one homeless shelter and then another. And then Bibi got mixed up with drugs. Sophia was taken away from her mother, put into a foster home, but she'd find a way to run away from the foster home and find her mother again. And over time, she was in three or four different foster homes, but she was always causing problems. She was always running away. The complications of her mother's lifestyle, the drugs, finally took its toll, and Bibi was dying. But one day she wrote an address on a piece of paper, and she gave it to her daughter. It was an address of a house in North Carolina, in Riverdale. And she gave her the unfinished piece of cross stitch that read, "The final form of love." And she said, if you ever get in trouble, take this and go to this house. Well, Sophia found an older guy, moved in with him. She became pregnant. And when she had her baby girl, she named her Beatrice, in memory of her mother, and because she said it was the most beautiful name she had ever heard. But her boyfriend became very distant after the baby was born. He started drinking more and more, and then he started using drugs. And that was when Sophia took her baby. She took the address and the cross stitch, and they got on a bus. And they went all the way across the country. And on Christmas Eve, they showed up at the doorstep of her grandfather's house. He loved his granddaughter and his great-granddaughter. He provided for her to go to school. She got a good job at the hospital. But Mr. Bentley's cancer finally did catch up with him. Hospice was called in. And Sophia was staying with her grandfather as much as possible. And then one night, in the middle of the night, he called her. She came into his room, and he said, "I want you to bring that cross stitch that you brought with you." And she went and got it, and then he said, "Now go in my closet. At the back of the closet, you'll find a red box, and open it." And when she did, she found a half of a piece of cross stitch, and when she put the two together, they were a perfect match. And it read, "The final form of love is forgiveness." And Mr. Bentley said, "I want you to put that on my grave. Put that on my grave." And that's what's going on in Riverdale, that wonderful town where people still care and life is usually fair.